All right, it's 9 o'clock, so we'll call the September 15th advisory committee to order. We'll start with a roll call. Denise?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. This is the roll call for attendance of the September 15, 2022 advisory committee meeting. City of Chino. City of Chino. City of Chino Hills.
Ron Craig.
City of Ontario.
Courtney Jones.
City of Pomona. City of Upland.
Greg Mew, present.
Cucamonga Valley Water District.
Eduardo Espinoza here.
Fontana Union Water Company.
Josh Swift.
Parupa Community Services District.
Chris Birch.
Fontana Water Company.
Chris Feely.
Monta Vista Water District.
Stephanie Reimer.
Minor One San Antonio Water Company. Minor Two Monta Vista Irrigation Company.
Stephanie Reimer.
Now for the Ag Pool, Nathan DeBoom. Henry DeHaan. Robert Feenstra. John Heitzing. Ron LaBruchery. Jeff Pearson.
Present.
Ron Petersma. Tarika Wan. Pete Hall. Jimmy Medrano. And for the non-ag pool.
Brian Guy.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
All right. Thank you. Just to check, make sure Dave Crosby, I know he's one of the first ones. Chino, we still don't have Chino on?
I don't see him, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So first item, do we have any agenda reorders or additions? Peter?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the advisory. We have no agenda additions or reorder.
Thank you, Peter. All right. The first thing we have is consent calendar, which are routine items. I'd be happy to have any discussion or if there's an anybody wants to entertain a motion to approve.
Non-IGA makes a motion to approve.
Thanks, Brian.
One second.
Okay. Thank you. Denise, can we do this by consensus? Is there anybody that opposes on the consent calendar? Hearing none, we'll pass the consent calendar. All right, thank you. All right, so the business item we have today is the safe field reset methodology update. I understand that this went through all of the pools and there was discussion at all of them. So I understand that there were some questions that came back from the appropriative pool meeting. I actually wasn't there last week, but my understanding is that some of those questions were passed on to Peter. And my understanding is that you'll do a presentation or something today and try to address some of those items that were brought to your attention. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. The presentation, we typically at advisory committee meetings, we skip a presentation that's been given to the pools because it's typically the same thing. But in light of the questions that came up after the confidential session for appropriate pool last week, we thought it'd be good to add a little bit of background and provide a little context. And actually, one of the things that occurred to me as I was thinking about this is some of the questions that the collective is grappling with today are questions that were that we're following a path that was created by people that are not involved today. And so a little bit of background, a little bit of history of how we got here might be helpful for everyone to put things into context. And so as I understood the questions, there were kind of three, four questions, depending on how you look at them, parts and subparts. The One thread of questions is, has Tom Harder, the appropriate pools consultant, been involved? Has he seen the responses? Has he had a chance to evaluate them? Along with, have his recommendations been incorporated and have they resulted in cost savings? So we'll address that in the presentation. The second thread and line of questioning is, how does the effort maximize beneficial use of the basin? And is there a cost benefit of the uncertainty analysis that we know of? And the third was some question uncertainty. What happens in 2025 versus 2030? And then what happens every year in between? Those are the questions kind of as I understand them. And we'll try to address those. And of course, we'll address anything else that the pool may want to discuss today. So if I can have that presentation up, please. A disclaimer, you'll notice that the footer has September 8th on it. That's because I'm not very good at PowerPoint. So, today is not September 8th. Just thought I'd say that. So a little bit of background. The reason we are looking at the uncertainty analysis is goes back to the way the safe yield was reset. For historical, just a brief tangent on the history of where we are today is we've had two safe yield resets. The first safe yield reset was for the period of 2011 through 20. The second one was for 2021 to 30. Now, you might think that we did one in 2011 and one in 2020, but that's just not how Chena Basin has worked. The first one finished actually in 2017. After a lot of rancor and several rounds of discussions. Does anyone remember what FANDA stands for? Does anyone remember the FANDA process? Right, so that was the facilitated non-disclosure agreement that the parties had to agree to get in the room to talk about how do we resolve the safe yield discussion. So that FANDA process, which in and of itself had some bitterness and debate, resulted in an agreement among the parties that was called the Safe Yield Reset Agreement. That was abbreviated as, anybody remember that? The Syrah. We thought since we're a wine producing region, would go toward the wines. So we had the Syrah, and the three pools approved the Syrah. Although not every party voted in favor, but the three pools actually did approve the Syrah. And so that was submitted to the court as a way of resolving all the issues at the time. The court looked at the Syrah and decided that it didn't like all the provisions and that it could actually sever some of the provisions of the Syrah and discard some of them while order other ones. So the court ordered Article 4 of the Syrah. And what Article 4 did, and I'll tell you a little more about that in the next slide, but before we go there, is it was there in the agreement to allow future safe yield resets to come about in a way that, number one, allowed parties enough review time. It made the data gathering in the in-between years, the data gathering and the evaluation more visible, more transparent, and more predictable. And it was there to keep from the parties from endlessly and at a very high cost arguing about how do the model results should be interpreted. We had these debates. Does anyone remember what the Saruni is? I see some heads and some chuckles, right? That was the Santa Ana River underflow new yield. That was something that we spent quite a bit of our lives debating. Does anyone remember what Destobapo is? That was a decline in storage above the approved overdraft. These are things that we spent hours and hours debating, right? And so by the time everybody got to 2017, everybody said, let's not do that again. So Mark Wildermuth was asked to write a memo of how do we do safe yield. So he wrote a tech memo on the safe yield reset methodology. So that also went to court as part of, and that was embedded, that was Article 4. So if we can go to the next slide, please. What was in the court order that was in Article 4 is, number one, the court's order that the safe yield is reset at 135 through the year 2020. Remember, this is still for the first safe yield for that decade, for 11 through 20. And by the way, a separate provision, I've bunched them together here in the same bullet, is that no retroactive accounting would happen prior to July 1, 2014. That was something that the appropriative pool had wanted, and the appropriative pool was able to successfully negotiate that with the other pools. And what's the significance of that? Well, if it had been 135 back through the beginning of 2011, there would have been less operating safe yield for the appropriative pool for those first few years. So there was no retroactive accounting on that. That same court order directed Watermaster to reset the safe yield in 2020 and provided a framework that would allow enough time for the parties to review. Why is that? Well, because in 2017, the parties felt there just hadn't been enough time. And Chino in particular said, we'd like that process to start sooner. So that was incorporated in the CIRA and it was incorporated in the order. It provides for an interim correction if the safe yield is more or less than 2.5% of the current safe yield at the time. That came about as a suggestion from one of the appropriators who thought, well, if the safe yield is going up, we should be able to take advantage of it. And at the same time, balance that with some others who felt that, well, if it's going down significantly, we should adjust for that because it's our basin and it's, we're stewards of the resource. That same court order directs Watermaster to incorporate future advances in best management practices and hydrologic science and get advice and recommendation from the parties in the pools on that in that endeavor. No advances were identified in 2017. It was a general statement that as the state of knowledge evolves in the future, Watermaster, you should update your model. And the next part of it was do update your model and complete a safe yield recalculation by June 30 of 2025. It was actually a reevaluation in 2025. And the significance of that was, look, if Watermaster is going to update the way it does the safe yield, we should all get a dry run before we get to 2030 and kind of get the kinks out of the process. And then he finally directed the annual collection and evaluation of data. That data, what is meant by that is the data that is used in the model to make, to use the model to make projections of safe yield. So the idea is, Watermaster, don't wait till year 10 to gather all the data because that gathering is a big exercise. And to give all the data as a massive data dump to all the parties because they're going to be swamped trying to keep up with you and you're going to want to move ahead. So do it on an annual basis. And while you're at it, evaluate the data. Why do we evaluate the data? Because we're in a prospective safe yield calculation environment. We do a prospective safe yield, which means we make projections of what are the conditions are going to be, what are the pump, what is pumping going to be, what is recharge going to be, what is hydrology going to be. So the idea of the annual evaluation is, well, we thought on this one parameter, we thought X, and now that we have actual data, it came in at Y. Does that materially affect the safe yield or not? So that's the idea, and we do that on an annual basis, so we remain true to our mission of protecting and maximizing the use of the basin. So that all happened in 2017, and since we all liked the safe yield reset process so much, we plunged into the next one immediately after. So we can go to the next slide, please. So then we did the next safe yield to be done in time to reset the safe yield for the next decade, 21 through 20. So at the time, Watermaster used the reset methodology tech memo that had been developed and had been ordered by the court. So when we presented that in the review process for the parties, we got comments from the parties in the pools. And some of the comments were very direct that the safe yield reset methodology should include an uncertainty analysis because it is a widely accepted best management practice. And the comments described what that would look like as an outcome. And it listed several benefits to the parties in addition to listing that practice is commonplace in the literature and is standard hydrologic practice. So we considered that comment and we agreed with it. But at the time for the 2020 safe yield recalculation, we had a court ordered methodology. So we said, we're going to stay true to that and we're not going to change it, but we're going to change it going forward and prove it out in 2025, like the 2017 court order says. That wasn't good enough for the city of Chino, and Chino went to court and claimed that an uncertainty analysis is standard engineering practice, that it is necessary to complete an uncertainty analysis, and that without a plausible range of safe yield estimates, we cannot confidently ascertain what the safe yield should be. So the outcome of 2020 was the judge said the safe yield, the way Water Master is calculated, is good. But moving forward, we are bound to the 2017 order to update the methodology. And we feel that the uncertainty analysis is something that the parties correctly pointed out is best management practice. We feel that the litigation in 2020 would come back again if we didn't have uncertainty analysis in there. So we began the effort a year and a half ago. That effort was budgeted. I'm going to hand off to Garrett, who will give you some of the slides that you saw last week at the appropriate pool to just sort of tie it back together, but also describe for you a little bit more of the peer review process and comments that we got along the way and some of the benefits, because one of the questions is, what's the benefit of having the uncertainty analysis as part of this? So before I ask Garrett to take over, are there any questions about the context and the background?
Questions from anybody in the room? Online? All right, I'll hand it over to Garrett. All right, Garrett, you on?
Yes, can everybody hear me okay?
I can hear you great. Thank you, Garrett.
Great. So if I could get the next slide, please. Before I get into the process of how we arrived at the 2022 safe yield reset methodology update, it's helpful to have a definition of uncertainty because that in itself has some uncertainty. But as we relate it to groundwater modeling, uncertainty is the difference between our computer model and the very complex physical system that it represents. We often have to make assumptions to simplify or abstract different complexities in the physical system when we're developing our computer model. And because of the complexity in the physical system, uncertainty is inherent and unavoidable in all models. Next slide, please. And we know that the Chino Valley model is very well constrained, well calibrated, accepted by the court. So what uncertainties exist in the Chino Valley model? They fall into two main categories. There's model parameter uncertainty. And so that involves the numbers that we assign to different properties of the aquifer, such as hydraulic conductivity, boundary inflows, even some parameters on the characterizing land use and parts of the surface water piece of the Chino Valley model. There's also predictive uncertainty, and that goes back to the prospective scenarios that we run to calculate the safe yield. And so those include the uncertainty in demand and supply plans. We don't know exactly what will happen in the future. And we also don't know what type of climate and hydrology that we expect in the future. So there's multiple types of predictive uncertainty. The process to develop the 2022 safe yield reset methodology update began with the release of the budget for fiscal year 2021-2022. We included some scope and budget to initiate this process to update the safe yield reset methodology. We got some feedback from the parties and the appropriative pool especially. We had some meetings with the appropriative pool representatives in early August of last year. We met with the representatives from the appropriative pool and refined our scope a little bit and budget to incorporate an additional peer review to help refine the process and really help narrow down the types of uncertainty that we'd be addressing in the safe yield reset methodology update. After that conversation, we revised the scope and budget that was reviewed at a special appropriative pool meeting in August and then got approved by the board after going through the pools and advisory committee in September of last year. So pursuant to this scope, we developed an initial technical memorandum that we released in October 2021. This TM gave a broad overview of the different types of uncertainty, how it relates to the Chino Valley model, and different ways that we propose to begin to think about addressing uncertainty when we develop this update. We had a workshop with the stakeholders in late October of last year, which was very helpful in helping us refine and you know, tweak our future scope for developing this proposed safe field reset methodology update. We went back with that information that we got from the peer review meeting and the feedback that we got, and developed a supplemental scope and budget, which defined our process for doing a survey of other best practices and how we would develop this safe field reset methodology update. And we presented that and eventually got approved by the board in November of last year. Following that approval, as we continued to develop the safe field reset methodology update, there were a few questions from the appropriative pool asking about the long-term schedule and costs of the safe field reset methodology update and eventually the implementation. So we prepared a high-level scope, schedule, and budget for the next couple of years of developing the safe field reset methodology update and implementing it and meeting some other aspects of the 2017 court order. We met with the appropriative pool in February of 2022 to review that high-level scope, schedule, and budget. We developed a more refined scope and budget for the current fiscal year that we released as part of the engineering budget in March of this year, which was included in the budget presentations and workshops that Watermaster hosted. We finished the first draft of the technical memorandum documenting the safe field reset methodology update, and we released that in May of 2022. We had two workshops going over that first draft. We had one workshop with all of the stakeholders, so a less technical overview of the proposed safe field reset methodology update. And then we had a peer review workshop, a more technical workshop later that month to go over some of the finer technical details of the methodology that we're proposing. And we got some very helpful feedback and input from the peer review committee. Between the release of the first draft and the release of the second draft, we had several conversations with some of the peer reviewers. Namely, we had a separate conversation with the City of Chino's consultant to go over some questions and help clarify and build more understanding of the methodology that we're proposing. We incorporated all the written comments that were given on the first draft technical memorandum. We got three peer reviewers provided comments from the ag pool and two from the appropriative pool. We included those and responded to those comments and developed a second draft technical memorandum that we released in July. And we had another peer review workshop on that, again, gathering input and feedback from the peer review committee. This was very helpful in continuing to refine our cost estimate and our process to implement the safe field reset methodology update. Through this process, we had some very close interactions with the appropriative pools consultant, Tom Harder. We had several phone calls with him to address several of the comments that he had and clarify a few pieces and comments on the proposed methodology. We've considered all of these comments and responded to them. There's a comprehensive comment and response section as attachment B of the detailed technical memorandum that I believe is in your packet for this month. So overall, this peer review process has been very helpful to refine our updated methodology, which here I'll summarize how the 2022 safe field reset methodology update is different than the current 2015 safe yield reset methodology. First, the 2022 update requires a consideration of parameter and predictive uncertainty, like I defined earlier. The update requires an uncertainty analysis during the model calibration process to identify a plausible range of calibrated models. And so a range of calibrated models means different sets of these parameters that meet calibration criteria. So it's matching water levels, matching discharge, to represent a plausible reality of what how we characterize the groundwater basin in our computer model. And then finally, the 2022 update requires that the safe yield be reset based on simulation results of an ensemble encompassing multiple unique projection scenarios. And so these projection scenarios include unique combinations of the model parameters. So one of these, the calibrated models that are generated during the uncertainty analysis, water demands and supply plans, and climate and hydrology. So by simulating the unique combinations, we can understand the uncertainty in the safe yield estimate and determine the safe yield that will be chosen for the future. One question that the appropriative pool brought up last week was, has the peer review process resulted in cost savings? And the answer is yes. The peer reviewers, like I mentioned, have offered very helpful comments on the overall approach and the specific chosen methodology that we're proposing. We've been working and bouncing ideas off of some of the appropriative pool consultants to refine our modeling approach. And this has resulted in a technically sound modeling approach that is much lower than what we initially estimated. So as we developed the initial drafts, we developed a high-level cost estimate for what we thought the uncertainty analysis or the 2025 safe yield reevaluation would cost. And this includes the uncertainty analysis. And we estimated that this was somewhere between $1.75 and a little over $2 million. But after talking with the peer review committee, we worked to refine this cost estimate. The appropriative pool requested a detailed scope with different line item tasks, and we developed that to respond to that request. And that resulted in a projected cost of just shy of $1.5 million. And so that $1.5 million includes the modeling that would otherwise have to be done and the uncertainty analysis. The uncertainty analysis is estimated to cost about $400,000, give or take. That's a rough estimate, more than what the modeling would have to be done otherwise. So as a point of reference, adjusted to today's dollars, the 2020 safe yield reset, the safe yield recalculation effort cost a little over $1 million. So given that, we aim to perform the next safe yield reset calculation, this 2025 reevaluation, prudently and as cost effectively as possible, as we try to do with all Water Master efforts. And one additional point I'll make on that is that through this peer review process, we wanted to emphasize that, you know, as we go through this uncertainty analysis, that since this is very new, we want to make sure to go through it in a very transparent way with enough peer review so we're communicating everything clearly, and that we get a complete understanding from everybody involved, so that we're only adding additional complexity if that's absolutely necessary. And we're trying to keep it to a minimum requirement to meet these best management practices, while being responsive to the court order. So it's worthwhile to address one of the appropriative pool's other questions from last week asking about the benefits of a model with uncertainty. And so this slide goes back and summarizes some of the points from the April 2020 appropriative pool letter commenting on the 2020 safe yield recalculation. And this outlined a few benefits, saying that this would provide basin managers with a sense as to the potential variability in the safe yield estimate for use in making decisions. This allows the ability to study the different scenarios and the different drivers of different scenarios. Some of these scenarios may look at the appropriator's behavior with respect to replenishment, potentially the effect of using stored water rather than replenishment water to augment net recharge, and explore possible alternative pumping scenarios. The way we do this process right now with using a single iteration and a single planning number for future groundwater pumping and future replenishment, future use of storage and replenishment water, we're not able to look at this variability, and that can be a little bit limiting in the understanding of the basin response to different behaviors. Next slide, please. A few additional benefits that we'd like to note from our survey of some of the relevant literature and other planning studies that are out there, that, you know, an uncertainty analysis can help develop projects and inform management strategies to maximize net recharge. They can also, by looking at an ensemble of results, and looking at the potential material physical injury that might occur and the drivers that lead to material physical injury or undesirable results, can inform projects or specific management strategies to avoid or mitigate these at a lower cost than what may occur without absent an uncertainty analysis. And then finally, the uncertainty analysis can allow an easy identification of monitoring gaps that may contribute to a greater uncertainty. And so if those monitoring gaps can be addressed through Water Master's monitoring programs, that can be used to reduce uncertainty in future safe yield recalculations or other uses of the model, such as something that might be used for evaluating risk of subsidence or things like that. Next slide, please. So a few of the activities that are contemplated in the future related to this, the safe yield reset methodology update, is like Peter mentioned, as part of the court order, we're doing the annual data collection and evaluation to, you know, on a regular basis to evaluate the data that we collect and understand how it affects the basin behavior and how it comports with the projection data that we use in our model. We're also going to be implementing this safe field reset methodology update in the 2025 safe field reevaluation process as ordered in the court order, and then eventually the implementing this in the 2020 safe field or 2030 safe field recalculation and reset process. As I talked about last week, some of the next steps, today we're asking for a recommendation and advice from the advisory committee. Next week, assuming that if the advisory committee were to recommend this to the board for consideration, we would ask the Water Master Board to move the court to approve the 2022 Safe Field Reset Methodology Update Reset TM. And so this reset TM is a summarized technical memorandum, which should be in your packet, that is just over one page summary of the safe field reset methodology that would be submitted to the court, and not the more detailed technical memorandum that we detailed the methodology and its implementation. Following this motion from the Water Master Board, Water Master would file this with the court for approval, and then eventually incorporate it into the 2025 safety reevaluation process, which we expect to begin sometime early next year. So this is a excerpt from the 2017 court order showing the court order segment providing for the update of the safe field reset methodology. So if you start right about in the middle of the page on line 13, it says, in furtherance of the goal of maximizing beneficial use of the waters of the basin, Water Master, with the recommendation and advice of the Pools and Advisory Committee, which is what we're asking for today, may supplement the reset technical memorandum's methodology to incorporate future advances in best management practices in hydrologic science as they evolve over the term of this order.
Thank you, Garrett. Mr. Chairman, members of the Advisory Committee, that concludes our presentation. Hopefully you found the answers to the questions in there, and maybe a little more than you asked for, but we thought it would be helpful to put it into context. At this point, we're looking to gather any advice and recommendation the committee has, whether it's a united recommendation or individual one, so we know what to represent to the board next week.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you, Garrett, for the information. And before we get into like the disposition of the committee, just want to make sure, is there any technical questions or other things that we want to ask of Peter or Garrett? We'll start within the room. It looks like Courtney's queuing up there.
There it is, sound button. Yes, thank you, Peter, and thank you, Garrett, for the background information and the answering our questions. I did have some questions about the cost. So it looks like, from my understanding, we're going to have a safe yield reset in 2025. And I know the next safe yield reset would be in 2030 as well. So do we anticipate like another 1.5 or somewhere around there for the 2030 safe yield reset in addition to what we're paying for the 2025 reset?
So what we're to be maybe just a refinement, 2025 is a reevaluation, not a reset. So it's a dry run through the methodology. We do expect that the cost of that dry run is the same as a full run, and the court order requires us to do one in 2025 and 2030.
Okay, thank you for the clarification, Peter.
You're good. Okay. Any other questions in the room? All right. Please go, Chris. Thank you.
So I guess, Peter, I'll ask that question in a different way. I think what you're saying then is we're in essence doing the 2030 recalibration or reset in essence in 2025. And so the majority of the expenses are put forth at that time. And from 2025 to 2030, we're using the data that is being provided to Watermaster on an annual basis. And that will determine in essence then what the 2030 actual reset is. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
Okay.
Again, a little refinement. The 2025 effort, we use the data that we have up until through 2023. Because
mm-hmm.
at some point you got to say, okay, that's all we got, right? And so then we continue to collect 5 more years worth of data. There's a couple of differences. I mean, the first one is 2025, we don't anticipate going to court.
Mm-hmm.
And the last two safe yield exercises were in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, because of all the disputes and arguments. So in 2025, we don't anticipate going to court because unless there's a drastic change, we're not going to be filing anything in court. Mm-hmm. It's an exercise and here's how it works. The second differentiator is experience. You know, we've not done this before. We have an estimate what we think it's going to cost. There is the process itself involves a decision of how many runs to actually make.
Mm-hmm.
And our understanding, working with Tom and Eric and everybody else, is that you start with a set, relatively smaller set before you decide to make more runs. And so we're going to learn from 2025. And my thinking, without any hard facts, but based on the way other things go like that, is that We're going to learn from the 2025 experience to run it even more efficiently in 2030.
Got it. So in essence, what we're doing is we're paying forward the expense in large part, you know, given what you said there, in large part, the expense that we would be paying anyway for the 2030 reset, with the exception of the additional 400 for the uncertainty that, in essence, the pool has asked for, that additional 400. But the million that we add to that, coming up, rounding up to 1.5-ish, we would be paying that anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this isn't an additional 1.5 million, because I think initially that was my impression, but over the last week or so, that clarification has been provided. It's been very helpful to that. So can future changes be made? So they're to the process, or in essence, the scope that Wessios has, if a pool has a way to refine the process, and I think you kind of answered this question already, to refine what it is we're doing, that maybe there will be cost saving measures that can be implemented. Can those be incorporated into the process?
I would say two things. The first one is the Water Master Board has the power and the duty to set safe yield. And to do that, it needs to rely on its engineer for technically sound recommendations. The second thing I would say is that Water Master has a history of consulting with the parties and getting advice and assistance all along the way, and we would continue to do that. So put the two together, the answer is yes.
Okay. And I think what I heard you say when you had mentioned the cost benefit, putting in my words, what you said is it's in essence a utility by utility basis. The benefits to the utility, those are for each utility to determine what that benefit is to them, as to if they want an additional run for how they, like Fontana, for example, when they're pumping more than the rights they have to acquire either wet water or rights from someone else. This would be a decision tool that they would have available to them to determine whether or not they wanted to actually buy wet water or they wanted to buy water from an appropriator that has water in storage. So it would be for them to determine whether there's that cost benefit to them. And each utility could use this model in order to do that for themselves.
I would say yes to that. And the collective has a tool that it can use as a whole. So because this basin is for the benefit and use of the collective, of the appropriators, the non-ag and the ag. And so what you have is a tool that you can use collectively to decide how you want to manage it. You can collectively decide to aggregate your production or your replenishment practices and management actions in a way that does things. For example, how do we pump collectively so the safe yield is maximized? Or how do we use storage more effectively? And this tool
will give you subsidence.
How about subsidence? How about pumping sustainability? This tool will give you the ability to do that as a collective. And if you think about that in an OBMP implementation plan update discussion, where everybody comes with their needs and wants to negotiate with others on their needs and wants, you have a tool, a robust tool that's available to you to make decisions, along with an understanding of how certain are those predictions for you to know to manage.
Okay. That's all I have. But Peter, I'd like to say, look, thank you. I appreciate all of the work that you put into this presentation. It's been super helpful. Thank you.
Thanks for the comments, Chris. Anybody else around the room? All right, online, anybody have comments, questions?
This is Dave Crosley. Can you hear me okay, Chris?
Yeah, Dave, glad you're here. So we'll make a note that you joined the meeting. I'm sorry I didn't pick up that you got here. So thank you. Go ahead, Dave.
I was a late arrival.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'd like to explore a little bit further the conversation that Chris and Peter were just having. It's my understanding that the methodology contemplates a number of scenarios, and that the results of the modeling would then describe a possible range of safe yield. Say a high number, a lower number, and then everything in between. I seem to recollect that maybe it was during one of the workshop discussions, or perhaps it's even stated in the tech memo, that a center point of that range would be the recommended safe yield. And if the stakeholders were to commit to conduct their behaviors in such a way that it would line up with, say, a safe yield number a bit higher than the center point, is it reasonable to think then that that somewhat higher number than the center point would be recommended to the board? If that makes sense.
First, let me go back to Garrett and ask him to describe figure one of the report and what the intention is for how the safe yield, what safe yield would be recommended. Garrett, can you please step in on that?
Sure. Would it be helpful if I pulled up and shared figure one?
Sure, yes.
Okay, let me give me 1 second to pull that up.
And Denise, you also noticed Brian Lee came in too from Miner.
Okay, let me go ahead and share my screen. Can everybody see this okay?
Yeah, we don't see anything yet, Garrett.
Might help to click share.
It just came up.
There we go.
Got it. So this is figure one from the from our detailed tech memo. This shows how we would contemplate calculating the choosing the safe yield from looking at our ensemble results. So what this shows is a hypothetical ensemble mean net recharge, which is shown in the dark blue line going from right now 2020 to 2050, and then the range of the ensemble results shown in the light blue band. So this would be the range of the projection scenarios that we run. So like Dave was mentioning, you know, we're going to have a higher number, a lower number, and kind of everything in between. And so we're choosing these scenarios very carefully. Like I mentioned, with the combinations of calibrated realizations, projection scenarios, which include the water supply and demands, and the future climate and hydrology. And so that kind of gives us this variation, and we get to understand this variability. And the way we would choose, the way we would propose to recommend the safe yield is to take the ensemble mean, which is a fancy way of saying that it's going to be the average of this dark blue line over a given 10-year period. Right now, this is about 2026 through 2035 or so. This is, again, just a hypothetical. And we would take that average, so that red line at about 135,000 acre-feet per year, and use that as the starting point for the safe yield that we would recommend. And that would be pursuant to the analysis of material physical injury, undesirable results that may occur under a given safe yield. And that process will again be brought back to the peer review committee and communicated clearly, because this is a little bit more complicated than the way that it's been done in the past.
Thank you, Garrett. So with that, hopefully common understanding among everyone attending our meeting here today, Dave, can you please pose your question again?
Yeah, well, thank you, Peter and Garrett. So when I look at figure one, it sort of focuses my attention to a point, a single number, based on consideration of a range of possibilities. And if the stakeholders were to commit to behaving in a certain way that if that were to happen, then the safe yield would be, I think, somewhat higher than that single intersection point. Is there discretion then to select that higher safe yield number, assuming that stakeholder commitment to behave in a certain way?
Okay, that very helpful, Dave. Now I understand better what you're saying. So in light of, you know, what Garrett said is we do the analysis, we have our range of uncertainty over the years, we have a mean, and we take sort of the average of the mean over the 10-year period, and we have a number. But the question then is, if the stakeholder is committed to behave a certain way, for example, pump a lot more in a particular location, so that would give a higher number, a higher safe yield number, is there discretion to select that?
That is correct, because I'm thinking, you know, this uncertainty analysis effort, we've been characterizing it as a management tool. It will inform us as to what to expect depending on our behavior. So, you know, we might choose to behave in one way with an expectation that there would be a different result.
Yes, I think that's a correct assessment. And so what I would say, thoughts that come to my mind as I'm processing your question, Dave, is number one, that is a tool that you can use for that purpose. And we've actually entertained the question from the appropriative pool in the past of doing an optimization study. Of how do we manage best if we wanted to actually maximize the safe yield. And so you can do that and have a range of certainty, because that would be sort of part and parcel of proposing something like that. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind, is that you can use the model with the embedded feature of uncertainty analysis to get there. In terms of managing the basin and having commitment to a certain behavior, that to me is not something I can answer today. Not prepared for that. It's not really part of the feedback we're looking for. But I will tell you that is something that we have time to discuss in the future as we go forward. I think the 2025 run that we're going to do will give us that range and will give us the opportunity to think about what would be commitments that could be made. What would be a credible number to achieve, and how do those commitments get monitored, enforced, and so on, or what are the consequences if they're not? Because that the overall obligation that the water master has is to protect the basin, and the overall interest that the parties have is to keep the basin protected. So we're all kind of operating in the same range, and we want to see maximized use. So the concept isn't necessarily adversarial to me, the way I hear it. I just can't give you a more definitive answer right now.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. I guess to try and state it a little bit more simply, the methodology described in the tech memo does it. How do I say this? Are we limited to a single choice, or does the board have discretion to consider more than just one number.
So the heart of the judgment is the percentage allocation of safe yield and for the appropriators operating safe yield. So for things to function, we need a number to work off of, a single number.
Right. There would be a decision on a number that the safe yield is a number. I get that. But when the board is deliberating, do they have discretion?
Dave, I'm sorry. I don't have a ready answer for that. I've not considered that.
Okay.
Up until now. So I'm not in a position to answer.
Okay. Thanks, Peter.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Anything else?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just real quick on the uncertainty analysis, a question for Peter or Garrett. One of the things that I think we understood as a management tool, as kind of alluded to in this, the last portion of the conversation, I guess the expectation that we have is that the uncertainty analysis is something that provides some clearer vision of the variability on a long-term basis. And so the corresponding expectation is that $400,000-ish effort is not something that has to be or would be triggered, every time Watermaster is jumping into the safe yield reset, either by the trigger of the 2% variability, up or down, as it's looked at on a more frequent basis. So I guess the question I would have is there anything in our recommendation to the board, advice to the board, and then the corresponding, filing with the court that we can do or say to kind of reaffirm that we don't have to do uncertainty analysis every time we look at the safe yield reset? Does that question make sense?
Ron, this is Peter. Some thoughts about that. First of all, let me set the issue of the plus or minus 2.5% aside. And my thoughts on that are that Watermaster does not intend to do a model recalculation of the safe yield each year to determine if we are plus or minus 2.5%. We don't think that's our mission. We don't think that's in the court order. We don't think that's necessary. We think that's an unnecessary expense. The way we perceive the order is to use professional judgment, and that's what the annual data collection and evaluation is for. That data is looked at by Watermaster's consultant, our engineer, to reach a qualitative professional opinion as to whether the safe yield will likely change as a result of comparing actuals to predicted. So we're not doing that. That would be, to me, not a very good use of our time or your money. The court order, turning our attention to 2025 and 2030, 2025 is a dry run of the methodology for calculating safe yield. So that is the methodology as it's been developed and included in the tech memo. That is a methodology that has embedded in it the uncertainty analysis. And I keep saying the word embedded because it's not a module that's attached, that's tacked on at the end. It's embedded in the whole process. And what we're supposed to do in 2025 is run through that process one time and see how it works to get the kinks out. If somebody has concerns, if somebody has ways to make it more streamlined, more cost effective, then that's what we do in 2025. And then with that knowledge, we do that in 2030. Again, the hope and expectation is that it will become more streamlined as a process. We will learn from doing that. But the uncertainty analysis we acknowledge it's a best management practice. So it has to be there as part of what we do each and every time.
Thank you, Peter.
So the degree of that will be of that effort will be something that, well, first of all, we've already kind of got it set up, so we'll be tuning up from there. And you know, I guess my expectation would be that we're incurring the kind of the heavier cost front end on this, and the streamlining you described will help on the cost effectiveness of it going forward.
Yes,
And as a follow up, it's really kind of a professional judgment kind of going forward as to what might trigger the need for a complete redo of the uncertainty analysis or just a tune up of what was already done. Is that a fair description?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Ron. Thanks for the comments or questions. Anybody else online have any questions? All right. Before I ask for disposition of this, I just wanted to kind of make one comment. First of all, thank you again, Peter and Garrett, for taking the time to go through that. I think it was helpful for several people on the committee. You know, to me, obviously, it's a lot of money we're talking about. No one's disputing that. But I really like the idea of being able to figure out kind of ranges and opportunities. And frankly, maybe that next step of trying to figure out how we even further optimize is something we should be considering. So, but I'm eager to learn what we come from this discussion and this exercise. So with that, do we have anybody in disposition of the committee? What do you guys want to do?
Well, I'll make a motion that, or I guess the advice is that Watermaster move forward with the item, with the understanding that agreed upon modifications be included within the item.
Agreed up. Just for clarity on that, you
with Watermaster
along the process.
Correct, and okay. And a pool. So if a party has a modification that they'd like to see, Watermaster can agree to that be included.
That there's a process for it?
Correct.
Correct. Does that make sense to you, Peter?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Do we have a second?
Montana Union, second.
Chris. Fairman, Josh. All right. Any further discussion on this? All right. Why don't we go ahead and do a vote on this, please? And you got the motion clear?
Can I get you to repeat it one more time just for the record? Perfect. Okay, sir, go ahead.
Watermaster can move forward with the safe field. Watermaster and the party request for a modification.
Thank you. This is the roll call vote for business item 2A for the amended safe yield reset methodology update. Motion by Mr. Diggs, seconded by Fontana Union. Minor one, Brian Lee.
A question. Abstentions are not allowed, are they?
It's a no.
I'm going to vote no. Soft no. That matters.
Minor two, Ms. Reimer.
Reimer.
I apologize, Ms. Reimer.
No.
City of Chino Hills.
Ron Craig, yes.
City of Chino?
No.
Cucamonga Valley Water District?
Eduardo Espinoza, yes.
Fontana Union Water Company?
Josh Swift, yes.
Fontana Water Company?
Chris Feely, yes.
Harupa Community Services District?
Chris Birch, yes.
Monta Vista Water District?
No.
Can you state your name for the record, ma'am? Thank you. City of Ontario?
Courtney Jones? No.
City of Pomona? City of Upland?
Bryn Yu, yes.
For the Ag Pool?
Jeff Pearson, Agricultural Pool, yes.
And for the non-ag pool?
Brian Guy, yes.
Give me 1 second. The motion passes by majority of 65.344 votes.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for your consideration of this item. Part of my job is to inform the board on the advisory committee advice and recommendations. So I would invite those that voted no, Monta Vista, Ontario, Chino, Minor One, to share with us any specific advice or recommendation, because simply voting no doesn't help the board understand the perspective.
Okay. And I would assume also that you'll be sharing what came out of the pools. Maybe that would add some context to it. But is there anybody from the dissenting votes that wants to make a comment that would be helpful for Peter to pass along to the board?
Dave Crosley.
Yeah, go ahead,
Dave.
Can
you hear me?
Yep, gotcha.
Yeah. Last week when the appropriative pool discussed this item, what was reported out of the pool's closed session was a request for a 30-day period of time during which we might confer with our consultant and consider information. And so Chino's no vote today is based on our disappointment that 30 days delay in the process was not embraced.
Thank you, Dave. Anybody else?
I'll add clarity from Saco's perspective in that regard. I utilized AP's understanding last week to compartmentalize my studying of this, and so I'm behind the eight ball in terms of my reading. Another 30 days could have gotten me the yes,
right.
Probably, but that burden is on me. That's why.
All right. Thank you. And for you online, you might not have heard that. That was Brian Lee. Just it was about the 30 days as well. So thank you. Courtney, did you want to answer?
For City of Ontario, I echo what Chino and Sacco had said. So an additional 30 days would have provided time for us to fully review everything and could have potentially gotten us to a yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you all. All right, we're going to move on. We'll go to the legal counsel updates. Brad, do you have anything that you want to cover today?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In the interest of time, I'll just touch on the things that have changed since last week, if that's
please.
Okay.
Thank you.
The item that had been listed as the September 30 hearing, that's the hearing that the court had continued on his own motion from August 31st on the Ontario application regarding the November approval of the assessment package, as well as Water Master's request that the court receive and file the two most recent semi-annual OBMP status reports. When the judge continued that on his own motion, he set that for September 30th. There is a stipulation that's been filed among all counsel representing parties who've made any filing related to that to move that to November 3rd to accommodate the counsel and the parties' schedules, given that they have conflicts on September 30th. We don't have an order from the court changing that date yet, but we do expect that to be coming. So plan on November 3rd for that, that item. And then in regard to the motion by Chino, Monta Vista, and Ontario, challenging the board's adoption of the 22-23 budget inclusion of funding for CEQA review of the OBMP update, that had initially been set for October 18th, and there was a stipulation filed, and the court ordered that that be moved up to October 14th, which is a Friday morning, 9 a.m. in Judge Ochoa's courtroom. Otherwise, I don't have anything new to report. I'll just remind you that on the rules and regs update, this is an item that was budgeted for following a request from some of the parties to explore a comprehensive or wholesale rewrite of the rules and regulations. And sometime in October, we will be sending out a solicitation asking for input on what changes the parties recommend.
Thank you, Brad. Anybody in the room have questions for legal counsel? Anybody online? All right. Thank you. Thanks. We'll move on to engineer update.
Good morning.
Andy, good morning.
Just a brief reminder that the ground level monitoring committee is meeting on September 29th at 9 a.m. We'll be discussing the draft annual report and the construction and calibration of one-dimensional compaction models in Northwest MZ1 that are designed to be used to develop a subsidence management plan in that area of the basin.
All right. Thank you. Sounds like a fun meeting, Andy. All right. Anybody have questions for Andy online or in the room? All right. Moving on. There's no CFO update unless anything's changed. You're good,
Joe? I have nothing to report today, sir.
All right. Thank you. I'll go to general manager update. Any updates for you, Peter?
Nothing different than I reported to the pools last week. I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Any questions in the room? All right. Any questions online? All right. Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it. Oh, yeah, we got one.
Peter, I don't recall from last week, but what is workshop for?
So thank you, Courtney. We had a workshop in April. This is four in a series of four workshops. I promise you there'll be no more. Okay. But we did sense the need and had requests from board members to provide sort of a comprehensive re-education of board and stakeholders. So workshop one was the judgment and how did it come about in Water Master version one. Workshop two was Water Master board version two and the creation of the OBMP. Workshop three in July was the OBMP from 2000 to today, what has been done, cost and benefit. And so workshop four, as you can see, kind of the progression. The idea is that since Chino Basin is an integral part of water supplies in the entire region, is to give a regional perspective on water supply demand challenges and opportunities in the entire region. Actually, that is a suggestion that was made to me by one of the board members in my performance evaluation, so we're acting on that. And it's intended not to be only a muni perspective, but it's integrated between the munis and the groundwater basin because it links to all three munis in the region. So we're following up on that. It will be all four boards, actually, will be invited. It'll be open to the public. It will be at the Frontier Center. And if I'm not mistaken, October 6th is our date. We don't have an exact time yet. We're trying to find what the right time of the day would be. But we're looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good discussion. You're welcome.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for the question, Courtney. All right, we'll move on to the IUA update. We had a little bit of something come out of the sky for once, so maybe Andy can give us a little update. So.
Thank you. While the presentation is being loaded, I'll talk a little bit about the rain we just had. I think it's going to be indicative of, you know, the climate change rain forecasting. We had a real strong forecast for Saturday, Friday night, all day Saturday. That didn't happen. Got a little bit of rain that Friday night. Not really much to write home about 20 acre feet from that storm. Was pleasantly surprised though, Sunday night, watching the news, a big, the storm that wasn't supposed to happen Sunday night came in, and we probably got about 300 acre feet from that storm. So that rained very hard in Upland locally, very hard in Rancho Cucamonga locally, but nothing in Fontana, nothing in Ontario really to speak of as far as captures go. So that was very surprising. Some of the basins filled up, 5 feet, others got no water at all. So the unpredictability and the spotty nature of that storm, I guess it was a pleasant surprise for a summertime storm. So that's the update there. Those numbers will be refined as we are able to process more of the data that we have coming in. So this is the groundwater recharge update. I'd like to come in after sort of on the heels of the GRCC to bring the committee some of the highlights from the past three months. And let you know sort of what the day in the life of the recharge program is like these days. I think I have control of this. So this is, I'll go through this fairly quickly. I think we're fairly used to this graph by now. This is a trend accumulation of the different flows to the basins over the past fiscal year, and it's got 10 years of history on there. The black line is our fiscal year that just ended at the end of June. So for stormwater, not bad for a dry year. We had a second year of a drought. We ended up around a little over 8,000 acre feet of stormwater captured. Not the best year, but considering the circumstances, I'm happy with that. We had a really strong December, as you can see, but that line jumping up in December. But then not much to follow that other than a little bit of rain in March. Recycled water, though, we really took advantage of the drought and some of the system changes that IUA made to some of its pump stations to allow more water to go up into our higher pressure zones. And you can see the dark dashed line exceeded last year's record number. Last year, our record number was around 16,200, and we hit about 17,050. And so I'm being asked if we're going to exceed that again. And so the answer to that question is maybe. It's going to see how dry this winter is going to be. But we do have the capability of pushing that much water up to our higher zones. So the monthly breakdown of that, I put some R's on the purple bars that exceeded our records in the previous month. So when you have a record year, we have several record months as well. Interesting to note, though, our October highest month of the year still wasn't a record. October is one of those months where, sort of a change in our supply-demand scenario. And the previous record there was probably around 50 acre feet higher than we were able to achieve in October. So I believe we hit a record month this last August. We broke our last record, and we'll see what we can do. But you can see the December rains there, about 5,500 acre feet for that December, with not much more for the rest of the fiscal year. I wanted to highlight this project. This is our RMPU project at RP3. In the photo on the left, you can see a basin that was constructed as part of the RMPU project. We're trying to get that basin online for this winter. Part of that is to build a routing structure shown in the middle and lay a pipeline, which is on the left. Inherently, that project shut down our recycled water deliveries to this basin. So that would have been a huge loss for the program. And so what I was able to do is working with my staff and the contractor on site and our engineering department, we procured an inflatable stop, affectionately known as a pig. I've highlighted that in the yellow there in the center photo. We installed that in the pipe so we could keep working, the contractor could keep working while we delivered water. We got the water back online. At the time of this meeting, I'd say we've added about 1,000 acre feet of recycled water that we couldn't have if we had just let this construction continue as planned. So hats off to my staff for that. A couple other things. We had a Brooks flow control valve reach its end of life. The circuitry on that failed. We had to order a new replacement for that. It just could not be fixed. So to keep that basin online with recycled water and stormwater, we took an actuator off of the Upland Basin site. So that allowed us to date about 100 acre feet of water continued flowing with recycled water and then management during the last storm. So this is a photo of that Upland flow control valve that was removed, and one of what we took off is shown on the left and moved down to Brooks while we're waiting delivery of that valve. Wanted to just highlight a cooperative project, the Conservation District, Chena Basin Conservation District, is repairing a spillway, a spill point from Montclair 1 into Montclair 2. It's completely taken apart. It had been undermined in the past few years. And so this program is assisting in use of our environmental permits to allow them to do that work. So this is a photo of that project in place. This should be done by storm season, and hopefully we'll have enough rain to use this spill point this winter. Where do we start on this one? So this is State Street Storm Drain. This is a cooperative project with the Conservation District as well. There was a valve that had failed, shown on the left. It had some parts that needed to be replaced and some alignment that needed to be done. Put out a bid to get this work done. Came in at around $16,000, which was more than they wanted to pay for that. So they asked IUA to help with our maintenance staff. Just in labor costs, I think we're going to save them around $14,000 on this project just by having IUA maintenance staff do this work. Sort of the downside of this is look at the channel. That's all runoff from the streets that collect on that inlet that blocks it from being used. Conservation District had to hire or rent a bobcat to get in there to push that trash off and remove it so IUA could do that work. So this is getting more and more of a problem in the recharge program. So just wanted to stay in everybody's attention that we continually battle debris in our systems, from things flushing off the street to homeless encampments to vegetation, from things that people illegally dump in our channels.
Do you have an idea that the trash capture devices?
It won't mitigate the occurrence of the trash. What it'll do is make us able to more easily remove it. So we're putting in, we received a grant from Cal Recycle. Part of that grant is to put in some trash booms, which will sort of focus that trash away from the structures that would clog. So a few years back, we had a cleanup project at Ely Basin, resulted in about $250,000 change order just to handle dirt that was impacted by 100 shopping carts and luggage and all the things that are left in the channel when the people are living in the channel, flee the channel, and that gets buried in the storm sediment. So those booms will sort of try to keep that out of the sediment and keep it in sort of a forebay area. So those have not been installed yet, but we're in the process of contracting and designing that work.
The issue from debris in the street going on.
How it gets into the channel, I can't speak to that, but we get all kinds of stuff in the channel. Small oil containers, plastic bags, bottles, cans, cups, plastic bags, to the larger debris, like sleeping bags and tents and umbrellas and things like that. The photo here is RP3, we did an infiltration restoration project. Our cover photo was that photo on the right. When this site was designed and built, there's a concrete distribution channel, trapezoidal shape. There was no ramp built down into that channel. And so we've had to come up with innovative ways to clean it out. When we route stormwater through there, some of the fine grain material settles out in that channel. So when we clean the basin, we don't want to leave that muddy material in the channel. So we have to clean it out. Otherwise, it'll just get flushed right back in again. So this photo shows how our contractor did it this last time. They were able to get in there with some equipment and lift it out using various heavy equipment. I think our last contractor did it with hand labor, but I thought this was a pretty innovative way to do it. This is RP3 basin, continuation of that. One of the issues I think we're having more and more with the warmer environment is we're starting to see, I'll just call it a water weed. I'm not sure what it is. It's more of like a stringy algae. We're starting to see it more and more. So on the right, I see that that weed all dried out. So we're having to do more desiccation of basins to try to kill that weed before it can choke the basins. And so this is a picture of when the basin was down, us trying to dry the basin out, trying to eliminate some of that weed. When we dry it out, we can scrape it up, but we want to keep it from growing in the first place. So we're trying to look into alternative ways of not having that weed grow. But the basin's online again. It's working very well. Like I showed with the bladder, we're putting about 600 to 900 acre feet a month in that particular basin. Some of the trash, we're trying to solve the trash problems. Before I kind of talk about this, I want to give some kudos to the Ontario Police Department. They helped us out at the Turner Basin. We had a homeless encampment there that one of our maintenance workers stumbled across and literally stumbled across. The homeless had set up tripwires on a perimeter to their camp. So we didn't know the camp was there until the tripwires were encountered. So we called in the police department and they helped us remove that camp. So I wanted to thank them publicly. Here you see CAL FIRE. It's another cost-saving method. CAL FIRE works for us when available. So when we're not fighting fires, we've got them pretty much kind of on our phone. They actually will call us when their crews are down, and we'll put them out at basins to pick up some of this trash so that it's not buried in the basin when the next storm comes. So here you can see them at Banana Basin working, and then the pile of trash that they were able to pick up on this particular day, and then at DeClez Basin. So we basically will provide them pickers and gloves and a porta potty. They bring out their own, water, food, supplies, cleaning, things like that. And it's a very economical means for us. If we were to do this with our landscape crews, it would cost many times more than CAL FIRE does for us. So hope you use them more. On that past slide, one of the things we're going to try to do with that weed, we want to dry it out. And I'm going to try getting CAL FIRE in there with rakes and try to remove that. It's hard to remove that dead weed. I'm sure it has a seed base of some kind. And heavy equipment would just be too expensive and require us to dispose of a lot of material. So I'm hoping that we can get them in there with rakes and help clean that up. Brooks Basin. So this is Brooks Basin. It was time to do a maintenance infiltration project on that. It had been probably 5 or 6 years since we had done it. We've had a problem, though. We used to use an abandoned piece of property as an easement. We would use that easement to pump our water to the channel when we wanted to drain the basin. That property is now being developed I think there's some tilt-up buildings going in there. Not sure what their use is, but that prevented us from using that right-of-way to drain the basin. So we're working with Union Pacific to try to, Conservation District is, to try to get an easement so we can pump across their right-of-way. So instead of cleaning this basin out all the way and getting down to the bottom, we let it percolate over the summer as we're sending water to other sites. And this is about 6 feet deep of water. We finally said, okay, that's good enough. We need to do something. So we're basically walking the slopes, breaking up crusts that develop on the slope. And so you can see we've hired a contractor with a lightweight dozer who was able to walk up and down that, breaking up that crust, making it more permeable. Our permit, so there, our recharge O&M permit with Fish and Wildlife expired on June 30th, and IUA's has already submitted a renewal application for that. It's being reviewed. That permit allows us, since we've submitted an application, we can continue to work for another year. That permit, really the changes to that are to add new basins. So we've made some improvements at Turner Basin for Turner Basin 5 and 8. We're anticipating using Wineville Basin. And so those basins have been added to the permit. The Army Corps of Engineers has actually been working with us. They've asked that we document when we clean the basins, we remove sediment, that we're not actively mining the basins and making them deeper. And so what we've worked out with is we would do a GPS survey, sort of a before and after on the cleanings. And so with the GPS equipment and some of the available software, and additional data sets online, we could probably get, 6 to 8 inches of accuracy. And Army Corps is satisfied with that arrangement. So we're going to implement that this year and in coming years so that we can comply with the Army Corps of Engineers permit. Upcoming, we're sort of done for this summer. We're waiting for the storm season to start in October. So we don't want to start any big projects. So some of the things we're going to do in the coming months is continue to use CAL FIRE as they're available to clean up basins. This is a picture of them. I believe this is 8th Street Basin. There's graffiti that is on some of our structures and the IUA property here. This is the distribution channel. It gets graffiti, also the walls get graffiti. So we want to continue to abate that. We find that when we don't, it sort of leads to more occupation of the sites and vandalism of the sites. We have staff gauges that get vandalized, so we're replacing those. This is Upland Basin. For some reason, our bottom staff gauge just walked away. I'm not sure why. So we have one in a Home Depot bucket filled with concrete there, but we put that in the water just for a rain event, and we'll get that replaced here. On the right, those are squirrel burrows. If we leave those alone, they could become burrowing owl burrows, or they could lead to seepage issues from the basin. So we actively, in the non-nesting season, go make sure that those are taken care of. Lastly, just wanted to share the crew. I don't know if you know all the people in this photo. I put little spotlights on the people who are really active in the recharge program component. The people without the spotlights are more of our pipeline distribution people. So Brent Rinsiger on the far left, he's our maintenance specialist that's doing all the basin cleaning work. Daisy in the white shirt there, she's our compliance sampler for the program. So when we have to sample storm water, well water, recycled water, she's the person that does that. Of course, myself. And then on the far right, I have an intern. His name is Quinn. And I use him a lot for security. When we have to go out to a site that has homeless activity, we send two people. And so he's been very instrumental in that. Just to share an anecdote, Daisy was sampling a well near a homeless encampment, and an assault broke out in the homeless encampment. So that's sort of a threat to us when we're out there working. And so we try to go out in teams when we need to. I think that might be my last slide. Yes, it is. I'd be happy to answer any questions or hear any comments you might have.
Thanks. Any questions for Andy?
Thank you.
At the risk of sounding like some creepy bromance thing, I think I speak for a lot of people that what you do, your experience and your leadership with this program has meant a lot to all of us in terms of water resource management and additional recharge. You had a couple of examples there just today, but I know you do that every day. So personally, and I think collectively, just want to show our appreciation. Thank you, Andy.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
What's that? It wasn't creepy.
No, I didn't feel creepy.
It was a little appropriate creepy. All right.
Even my goosebumps are creepy. All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Thank you so much. So moving on, is there any other IUA updates? Anybody online have any updates? All right, we'll go ahead and move on to any other MET member agencies have any updates to share with us today? All right, then we'll move on to item four, committee member comments. Anybody in the room have any comments? Anybody online? All right, thank you. Peter, any other business?
No, sir.
And no confidential session that I'm aware of? All right. Sounds good. Thank you. The meeting's adjourned. Appreciate everybody's input.